So I want to talk to you today about an instrument that has been developed. We call it the Delta Extensometer. So what it measures is vertical soil displacement, high-resolution vertical soil displacement. And when I say high resolution, I mean we can get down to 10 nanometers of resolution, so about the width of a DNA molecule. So incredibly accurate displacement resolution. So what I want to do today is give you a little bit of background on the general method that we're using, and show you what our instrument looks like and show you some of the results we have and a few of the applications that we've looked at. So here's just a general schematic. So this is a saturated soil diagram. So the total stress equals the effective stress, or the load bore by the solid particles, plus the pore pressure, or the load bore by the water in this case. So what happens if I increase the total stress? So I have a step increase in total stress. Part of that load is going to be held by the pore pressure and the water, and part of that load is going to be held by the solid grains. And it is the loading coefficient that tells us the percentages. So the loading coefficient is a number between 0 and 1. It tells us what percentage of that load, of that increase in total stress, is going to be held by the pore pressure. So if the loading coefficient is 1, that means 100% of that added load is going to be held by pore pressure, whereas 0% is going to be held by the effective stress. If the loading coefficient is 0, 0% of the load is held by pore pressure, and it's all held by the effective stress. Now, loading coefficient is determined by properties of the material. So it's determined by the compressibility of the matrix compared to the compressibility of the liquid in the pore space. So what would cause a change in total stress? One thing would be a barometric pressure fluctuations at the ground surface. Oops. Another thing is mass loads at the ground surface. So if I walk over the soil or if I drive a vehicle over, it's going to increase the total stress. And another way that we can add a mass load is adding a water load at the ground surface. So if a lake were to fill up, or if it rains and you change the moisture content near the ground surface, it's going to cause the total stress to increase in the subsurface. For this first application, that's what we're interested in. We're interested to know, can we use these hydromechanical measurements to determine changes in soil moisture content near the ground surface? Why would we want to do that? The advantage is the volume of influence. So the deeper you make these measurements, the larger the averaging region. So we can easily get tens to hundreds and potentially larger meters squared from a single measurement in the subsurface. So that's at the ground surface. The averaging area can be from tens to hundreds of meters squared. That's the primary reason we would be interested in using this technique to measure changes in moisture content. So in the literature, one way that this has been done is to measure the pore pressure in a formation where the loading coefficient is near 1. So 100% of the load is going to be held by the pore pressure, and there's low hydraulic conductivity. So when we create these pore pressure gradients, the water is not going to flow. And this has been done successfully. So if these parameters are met, then you can use this technique. You can measure just pore pressure, and you can see changes in moisture content. You can see the pressure increase from rainfalls. You can see it decrease as you lose water to evaporation. The main drawback to this technique is that it's limited by the geology. So if these parameters are not met, then it does not work as well. So a proposed solution is to measure the effective stress in addition to the pore pressure. And it's not trivial to make this measurement at the resolution that we're interested in, but this is what we aim to do, and this is where the instrument that we develop comes in. So we measure displacement. We don't measure effective stress directly, but it is related. So the displacement that we're measuring is related to the effective stress by E, which is the modulus, and then the length of the instrument that we're using to make the measurement. So our first application, we decided to install one of these instruments in the vadozone. And the reason that we did that is in the vadozone, we expected the loading coefficient to be near 0. And the reason for that is that the compressibility of air is 21,000 times greater than the compressibility of water. So once we start adding air into that pore space, we expected most of the load to be held by the effective stress rather than the pore pressure. This is a schematic of our instrument. So it's 2 meters long. It's about 25 millimeters in diameter. At the top and bottom of the instrument, the diameter is a little bit larger. So we call it, it's made primarily of fiberglass. So at the top and bottom, it's a little larger diameter, and we call those our anchors. So when we install in the soil, that little larger diameter, it forms a friction fit with the soil. And our lower anchor, there's a rod that's connected and runs up the middle to the, and it sits inside of the upper anchor, and that's where we make our displacement measurement. So we measure the distance between the top of the upper anchor and the top of the rod that is connected to the lower anchor. There's a picture. It's not very extravagant. It looks like a 2 meter long broomstick. And this is what a typical installation looks like. So we have a 2-inch PVC casing that we grout in place. It's open at the bottom, and so we go inside the 2-inch PVC casing and we install our instrument below in undisturbed soil. Then we can lower our transducer inside the casing and it rests on top of the extensometer, and that's where we make the displacement measurement. This is just a close-up of the transducer, so this is what we use to actually make the displacement measurement, and we use to get the 10 nanometers of resolution. We've been successfully installed 12 of these instruments so far in a variety of soil types. So we've installed them in sand, and we've installed in clay. And the work that I'm going to show today is primarily from the South Carolina site, which is where I did my master's research. So I said at the beginning that it should respond to mass loading. And in this case, the mass is myself. So I'm going to walk over the instrument and I'm going to walk away. In this particular example, the instrument is installed 3 meters below the ground surface, so it extends from 3 to 5 meters below the ground surface. So in the experiment, I'm going to walk over the instrument. We expect the soil to compress, and for our convention, that means negative displacement. And then I walk away and we expect the soil to rebound, so to expand, or for us, that's positive displacement. And here are the results. So it does exactly that. I repeated that cycle 8 times. So every time I walk over the instrument, it compresses. Every time I walk away, it expands. That total measurement is 320 nanometers. So a huge 320 nanometer signal. So this proves that the sensor does respond to mass loading, and we used these tests when we first installed them to verify that we had good contact with the soil, that the instrument was responding correctly, and we used this as a way to estimate what the modulus or the stiffness of the soil was by adding a known load at the ground surface. And so for this application, we were interested in changes from moisture content. So we expect the same type of response. If we increase the moisture content, we expect negative displacement or compression. And here's an example from rainfall. So the blue line is cumulative precipitation, and the black line is our displacement data. You see that every time we have a rain event, there's compression of the soil or negative displacement. And between the rain events overall, we have extension. But this shows that our instrument does respond the changes in moisture content that we're observing here by changes in rainfall. Conceptually, those examples are due to changes in mass or load above the instrument. And those were the applications that we're interested in there, but it also responds to changes in pore pressure at the instrument. So if the pore pressure changes near the extensometer, we expect a related change in displacement. We had hoped that this change would be small, but we found out that it actually, even in the vadosone, small changes in pore pressure cause pretty large changes in displacement. So we had to go back and we installed additional sensors in the subsurface, tried to get an idea of how is the pore pressure changing near the instrument to come up with a way to subtract that signal out. The same thing is true of temperature. So the temperature changes at the depth of the instrument. It's going to cause thermal expansion or contraction that we can measure with the resolution of our sensor. That's why 3 meters is the shallowest installation we have. We try to install below the depth where we'll see any diurnal fluctuations in temperature, but we do see seasonal long-term changes in temperature. And for these applications, that was a signal that we tried to extract. But for a different application, I want to focus on the pore pressure a little more. So in the if we were to install an extensometer in the saturated zone, and we add a mass load at the ground surface, we locally increase the pore pressure. So we just created a gradient, and if the water is able to flow, it's going to flow along that gradient until it comes back to equilibrium. The same thing is true if we remove that mass load. We just created a pore pressure gradient, and the water is going to flow, if it's able to, until it comes back to equilibrium. So what would displacement do in this scenario? Conceptually, what we expected, we expect to see compression, and then as that pore pressure equilibrates, we gradually get more and more compression or negative displacement. And the opposite happens when we lose the load, or we remove the load. We see elastic extension, and then as that pore pressure equilibrates, our displacement responds slowly. So we did a similar type of test. We had another mass load of my body weight. So I stand over the sensor, but I stood there longer and waited for the pore pressure to equilibrate. And these were the results. So the blue circles are the field data, and it responded exactly as we expected. We get the initial compression for the elastic response, followed by a slower poroelastic response as that pore pressure equilibrates. Remove the load, there's an elastic response, and then the slower poroelastic response. The red line, that is simulation data. So my colleagues at Clemson, they created a COMSOL model. And so they fit the data that we reported in the field using the COMSOL model, and they use three parameters to make this fit. They use the modulus, or the stiffness of the soil, the hydraulic conductivity, and then they needed a third parameter, which was the thickness of the vatus zone, or here the depth of the capillary fringe, is how it was described. So we were able to use the data we collected in the field and a model to estimate in situ parameters of the soil. We're able to calculate the hydraulic conductivity and the modulus using this model from a modest mass load. We really came upon this by accident. We weren't trying to install in the saturated zone just yet, but this was our first attempt to model the data, and we think that it has potential applications for it. So these loads were applied directly over the sensor, but if we were to apply radial loads, we could get it potentially. We haven't done this yet, but an idea of the heterogeneity of the hydraulic conductivity, for example. That's another application that I'm interested in trying. So I flew through that a little bit, but to conclude, the primary conclusion is that a tool has been developed. So we created a tool that we can use to evaluate changes in effective stress by measuring high-resolution displacement. We call that the delta extensometer. We have proved that it can be installed in a variety of soil types, from between sand and clay. We've installed 12 instruments successfully so far. We know that the instrument responds to mass loading. It responds to barometric pressure loading and also to hydraulic loading from precipitation and changes in moisture content. We did figure out that it is important to account for the pore pressure component, even in the vatus zone, for some applications, or for all applications, either to remove that signal if it's not the signal that you're interested in, or to measure it if that is a signal that you are interested in. And finally, displacement data along with numerical modeling can be used to evaluate in situ soil properties, the hydraulic conductivity, and the soil modulus, or the soil stiffness. And thank you for listening. I want to recognize Larry Murdoch, my advisor at Clemson, and my colleagues at Clemson, as well as NSF, who helped to fund this project.
Do you have time for questions?
Yes.
How long did the sensor last underground?
The oldest sensors that we have that were started before I was a grad student, we have almost 4 years of data. So the transducer we can remove, but the instrument itself, the extensometer, is installed permanently. We haven't tried removing any. So those instruments have 4 years, getting close to 5 years. But the transducer, we do have to remove it sometimes because the span is very small. If the sensor were to drift outside of the span of the instrument or the transducer, we remove it, have to adjust, and then we can reinstall. So we've never removed a sensor, and they've worked for close to 5 years, but we do occasionally have to remove the transducer because the span is so small and the resolution is so high.
Yes. How do you get to the transducer? Isn't that underneath the anchor?
No, it rests on top of the instrument. So that 2-inch PVC casing, it stays open because we need access. We need to be able to remove it when it does drift off scale. So we lower it, we have magnets that fit onto the top of that top anchor.
How do you guys come up with your 2-meter length and how close to the surface have you installed?
So 3 meters for the top of the instrument, that's as shallow as we have installed. And the 2 meters was just a starting point. So the longer it is, the more displacement that we'll get. So it was just a starting point. We've talked about trying to make them smaller, but that's, we haven't tried that yet.
I have a question.
Yes.
If you've left it in for 4 years in and out, have you been through a freeze thaw cycle, maybe in Pullman?
So the 4 years is at the Clemson site, so we don't get too many freeze thaw cycles. I haven't looked at that. I'm sure that we have had freeze-thaw cycles, but it's not in that setting. It's not something that I.
You could dump liquid nitrogen over there. That'd be fun.
We had one snow while we were there, and I looked at that. I was interested. It looked similar to the rainfalls, but it was such a small snow that we didn't see a whole lot of displacement from that event.
And have you? You walk back and forth, so are you the maximum load that's been applied? Or have you driven a truck, or did you have a big dinner one night?
We've driven vehicles over the instrument, so it results in a much bigger displacement than that. One of the things that we're using that for was to see how far away can we see the vehicle. So my body weight, as I walk away from the instrument, about one times the depth. So if the instrument is 3 meters below the ground surface, it can see me at 3 meters away, my body weight. And we've done that same thing with vehicles, and we've been able to get twice as far. So we've seen the instrument respond to a car driving about two times the depth of installation. So the deeper we install it, the larger that region gets. But for our test, we've two times the depth of installation for a vehicle load.
No other questions, we'll move on. Thank you.